and farther past him. Farther past him was Maya. Maya, no longer hunched in her chair. She was sitting up straight. Straight as a stick. Her eyes as wide as they could go. She stared at Tasha as though she alone held all the answers to life. Monica Seltsky looked less awed, and she fixed her gaze on Tasha. "Surely you aren't suggesting the Moroi fight alongside the Guardians when the Strigoi come." Tasha regarded her levelly. "No. I'm suggesting the Moroi and the Guardians go fight the Strigoi before they come." A guy in his 20s who looked like a Ralph Lauren spokesmodel shot up. I would have wagered money he was a royal. No one else could have afforded blonde highlights that perfect. He untied an expensive sweater from around his waist and draped it over the back of his chair. "Oh," he said in a mocking voice, speaking out of turn. "So you're going to just give us clubs and stakes and send us off to do battle?" Tasha shrugged. "If that's what it takes, Andrew, then sure." A sly smile crossed her pretty lips. "But there are other weapons we can learn to use, too. Ones the Guardians can't." The look on his face showed how insane he thought the idea was. He rolled his eyes.
"Oh, yeah? Like what?"
Her smile turned into a full-fledged grin.
"Like this."
She waved her hand, and the sweater he'd placed on the back of his chair burst into flames. He yelped in surprise and knocked it to the floor, stamping it out with his feet. There was a brief collective intake of breath throughout the room, and then chaos broke out. Chapter 13. People stood up and shouted, everyone wanting their opinion to be heard. As it was, most of them held the same view. Tasha was wrong. They told her she was crazy. They told her that in sending out Moroi and Dompiers to fight the Strigoi, she'd be expediting the extinction of both races. They even had the nerve to suggest that that was Tasha's plan all along, that she was somehow collaborating with the Strigoi in all of this. Dimitri stood up, disgust all over his features as he surveyed the chaos.
"You might as well leave. Nothing useful's going to happen now."
Mason and I rose, but he shook his head when I started to follow Dimitri out.
"You go on," said Mason. "I want to check something out."
I glanced at the standing, arguing people. I shrugged. "Good luck." I couldn't believe it had only been a few days since I'd spoken to Dimitri. Stepping out into the hall with him, I felt like it'd been years. Being with Mason these last couple of days had been fantastic, but seeing Dimitri again, all of my old feelings for him came rushing back. Suddenly, Mason seemed like a child. My distress over the Tasha situation also came back, and stupid words fell out of my mouth before I could stop them. "Shouldn't you be in there protecting Tasha?" I asked. "Before the mob gets her? She's going to get in big trouble for using magic like that." He raised an eyebrow.
"She can take care of herself."
"Yeah, yeah, because she's a badass karate magic user. I get all that. I just figured since you're going to be her guardian and all."
"Where did you hear that?"
"I have my sources." Somehow, saying I'd heard it from my mom sounded less cool. "You've decided to, right? I mean, it sounds like a good deal, seeing as she's going to give you fringe benefits." He gave me a level look.
"What happens between her and me is none of your business," he replied crisply.
The words, "between her and me," stung. It sounded like he and Tasha were a done deal. And, as often happened when I was hurt, my temper and attitude took over. "Well, I'm sure you guys will be happy together. She's just your type, too. I know how much you like women who aren't your own age. I mean, she's what, 6 years older than you? 7? And I'm 7 years younger than you."
"Yes," he said after several moments of silence.
You are. And every second this conversation goes on, you only prove how young you really are.
Whoa, my jaw almost hit the floor. Not even my mother punching me had hurt as badly as that. For a heartbeat, I thought I saw regret in his eyes, like he too realized just how harsh his words had been. But the moment passed, and his expression was hard once more.
Little Dompierre?
A voice suddenly said nearby. Slowly, still stunned, I turned toward Adrian Ivashkov. He grinned at me and gave a brief nod of acknowledgement to Dmitri. I suspected my face was bright red. How much had Adrian heard? He held up his hands in a casual gesture.
I don't want to interrupt or anything. Just wanted to talk to you when you have time.
I wanted to tell Adrian I didn't have time to play whatever game he was into now, but Dmitri's words still smarted. He was looking at Adrian now in a very disapproving way. I suspected he, like everyone else, had heard about Adrian's bad reputation. Good, I thought. I suddenly wanted him to be jealous. I wanted to hurt him as much as he'd hurt me lately. Swallowing my pain, I unearthed my man-eating smile, one I hadn't used to full effect in some time. I walked over to Adrian and put a hand on his arm. I've got time now. I gave a nod of my own to Dmitri and steered Adrian away, walking close to him. See you later, Guardian Belikov. Dmitri's dark eyes followed us stonily. Then I turned away and didn't look back.
Not into older guys, huh?
Asked Adrian once we were alone. You're imagining things, I said. Clearly, my stunning beauty has clouded your mind. He laughed that nice laugh of his.
That's entirely possible.
I started to step back, but he tossed an arm around me.
No, no. You wanted to play chummy with me. Now you've got to see it through.
I rolled my eyes at him and let the arm stay. I could smell alcohol on him as well as the perpetual smell of cloves. I wondered if he was drunk now. I had the feeling that there was probably little difference between his attitudes, drunk or sober. What do you want? I asked. He studied me for a moment.
I want you to grab Vasilisa and come with me. We're going to have some fun. You'll probably want a swimsuit, too.
He seemed disappointed by the admission of this.
Unless you want to go naked.
What? A bunch of Maroi and Dompierres just got slaughtered, and you want to go swimming and have fun?
It's not just swimming, he said patiently. Besides, that slaughter is exactly why you should go do this.
Before I could argue that, I saw my friends round the corner. Lissa, Mason, and Christian. Eddie Castile was with the group, which shouldn't have surprised me, but Maya was as well, which certainly did surprise me. They were deep in conversation, though they all stopped talking when they saw me.
There you are, said Lissa, a puzzled look on her face.
I remembered Adrian's arm was still around me. I stepped out of it. Hey, guys, I said. A moment of awkwardness hung around us, and I was pretty sure I heard a low chuckle from Adrian. I beamed at him and then my friends. Adrian invited us to go swimming. They stared at me in surprise, and I could almost see the wheels of speculation turning in their heads. Mason's face darkened a little, but like the others, he said nothing. I stifled a groan. Adrian took me inviting the others to his secret interlude pretty well. With his easygoing attitude, I hadn't really expected anything else. Once we had swimsuits, we followed his directions to a doorway in one of the far wings of the lodge. It held a staircase that led down and down and down. I nearly got dizzy as we wound around and around. Electric lights hung in the walls, but as we went farther, the painted walls changed to carved stone. When we reached our destination, we discovered Adrian had been right. It wasn't just swimming. We were in a special spa area of the resort, one used only for the most elite Moroi. In this case, it was reserved for a bunch of royals I assumed were Adrian's friends. There were about 30 others, all his age or older, who bore the marks of wealth and elitism. The spa consisted of a series of hot mineral pools. Maybe once they'd been in a cave or something, but the lodge builders had long since gotten rid of any sort of rustic surroundings. The black stone walls and ceiling were as polished and beautiful as anything else in the resort. It was like being in a cave, a really nice designer cave. Racks of towels lined the walls, as did tables full of exotic food. The baths matched the rest of the room's hewn-out decor, stone-lined pools containing hot water that was heated from some underground source. Steam filled the room, and a faint metallic smell hung in the air. Sounds of partygoers laughing and splashing echoed around us. "Why is Mia with you?" I asked Lissa softly. We were winding our way through the room, looking for a pool that wasn't occupied. "She was talking to Mason when we were getting ready to leave," she returned. She kept her voice just as quiet. It seemed mean to just, I don't know, leave her. Even I agreed with that. Obvious signs of grief were written all over her face. But Maya seemed at least momentarily distracted by whatever Mason was telling her. "I thought you didn't know Adrian," Lissa added. Disapproval hung in her voice and in the bond. We finally found a large pool, a little out of the way. A guy and a girl were on the opposite side, all over each other, but there was plenty of room for the rest of us. They were easy to ignore. I put a foot into the water and pulled it back immediately. "I don't," I told her. Cautiously, I inched the foot back in, slowly followed by the rest of my body. When I got to my stomach, I grimaced. I had on a maroon bikini, and the scalding water caught my stomach by surprise. "You must know him a little. He invited you to a party." "Yeah, but do you see him with us now?" She followed my gaze. Adrian stood on the far side of the room with a group of girls in bikinis much smaller than mine. One was a Betsy Johnson suit I'd seen in a magazine and coveted. I sighed and looked away. We'd all slipped into the water by then. It was so hot I felt like I was in a soup kettle. Now that Lissa seemed convinced of my innocence with Adrian, I tuned in to the others' discussion. "What are you talking about?" I interrupted. It was easier than listening and figuring it out myself.
"The meeting," said Mason excitedly.
Apparently, he'd gotten over seeing me and Adrian together. Christian had settled onto a small shelf in the pool. Lissa curled up beside him. Putting a proprietary arm around her, he tipped his back so it rested on the edge.
"Your boyfriend wants to lead an army against the Strigoi," he told me. I could tell he was saying it to provoke me.
I looked at Mason questioningly. It wasn't worth the effort to challenge the boyfriend comment.
"Hey, it was your aunt who suggested it," Mason reminded Christian. "She only said we should find the Strigoi before they find us again," countered Christian. "She wasn't pushing for novice fighting. That was Monica Seltsky."
A waitress came by then with a tray of pink drinks. These were in elegant, long-stemmed crystal glasses with sugared rims. I had a strong suspicion the drinks were alcoholic, but I doubted anyone who made it into this party was going to get carded. I had no idea what they were. Most of my experiences with alcohol had involved cheap beer. I took a glass and turned back to Mason.
"You think that's a good idea?"
I asked him. I sipped the drink, cautiously. As a guardian in training, I felt like I should always be on alert. But tonight,
I once again felt like being rebellious. The drink tasted like punch. Grapefruit juice. Something sweet, like strawberries. I was still pretty sure there was alcohol in it, but it didn't appear strong enough for me to lose sleep over. Another waitress soon appeared with a tray of food. I eyed it and recognized almost nothing. There was something that looked vaguely like mushrooms with cheese, as well as something else that looked like little round patties of meat or sausage. As a good carnivore, I reached for one, thinking it couldn't be that bad.
"It's foie gras," said Christian. There was a smile on his face I didn't like. I eyed him warily.
"What's that?"
"You don't know?"
His tone was cocky, and for once in his life, he sounded like a true royal touting his elite knowledge over us underlings. He shrugged.
"Take a chance. Find out."
Lissa sighed in exasperation. "It's goose liver."
I jerked my hand back. The waitress moved on, and Christian laughed. I glared at him.
Meanwhile, Mason was still hung up on my question about whether novices going to battle before graduation was a good idea.
"What else are we doing?"
he asked indignantly.
"What are you doing? You run laps with Belikov every morning. What's that doing for you? For the Maroi?"
What was that doing for me? Making my heart race and my mind have indecent thoughts. "We aren't ready," I said instead.
"We've only got 6 more months,"
piped in Eddie. Mason nodded his agreement.
"Yeah, how much more can we learn?"
"Plenty," I said, thinking of how much I'd picked up from my tutoring sessions with Dimitri. I finished my drink. "Besides, where does it stop? Let's say they end school 6 months early, then send us off. What next? They decide to push back further and cut our senior year? Our junior year?" He shrugged.
"I'm not afraid to fight. I could have taken on Strogoi when I was a sophomore."
"Yeah," I said dryly. "Just like you did skiing on that slope." Mason's face, already flushed from the heat, turned redder still. I immediately regretted my words, particularly when Christian started laughing.
"Never thought I'd live to see the day when I agreed with you, Rose, but sadly, I do."
The cocktail waitress came by again, and both Christian and I took new drinks.
"The Maroi have got to start helping us defend themselves."
"With magic?" asked Maya suddenly. It was the first time she'd spoken since we'd got here. Silence met her. I think Mason and Eddie didn't respond because they knew nothing about fighting with magic. Lissa, Christian, and I did, and we were trying very hard to act like we didn't. There was a funny sort of hope in Maya's eyes, though, and I could only imagine what she'd gone through today. She'd woken up to learn her mother was dead, and then had been subjected to hours and hours of political bantering and battle strategies. The fact that she was sitting here at all, seeming semi-composed, was a miracle. I assumed people who actually liked their mothers would barely be able to function in that situation. When no one else looked like they were going to answer her, I finally said, "I suppose, but I don't know much about that." I finished the rest of my drink and averted my eyes, hoping someone else would take up the conversation. They didn't. Maya looked disappointed, but said no more when Mason switched back to the Strogoi debate. I took a third drink and sank into the water as far as I reasonably could and still hold the glass. This drink was different. It looked chocolatey and had whipped cream on top. I took a taste and definitely detected the bite of alcohol. Still, I figured the chocolate probably diluted it. When I was ready for a fourth drink, the waitress was nowhere in sight. Mason seemed really, really cute to me all of a sudden. I would have liked a little romantic attention from him, but he was still going on about Strogoi and the logistics of leading a strike in the middle of the day. Maya and Eddie were nodding along with him eagerly, and I got the feeling that if he decided to hunt Strigoi right now, they'd follow. Christian was actually joining the talk, but it was more to play devil's advocate. Typical. He thought a sort of preemptive strike would require guardians and Maroi, much as Tasha had said. Mason, Maya, and Eddie argued that if the Maroi weren't up to it, the guardians should take matters into their own hands. I confess, their enthusiasm was kind of contagious. I rather liked the idea of getting the drop on Strigoi. But in the Badika and Drozdov attacks, all the guardians had been killed. Admittedly, the Strigoi had organized into huge groups and had help, but all that told me was that our side needed to be extra careful. His cuteness aside, I didn't want to listen to Mason talk about his battle skills anymore. I wanted another drink. I stood up and climbed over the edge of the pool. To my astonishment, the world started spinning. I'd had that happen before when I got out of baths or hot tubs too quickly, but when things didn't right themselves, I realized those drinks might have been stronger than I thought. I also decided a fourth wasn't such a good idea, but I didn't want to get back in and let everyone know I was drunk. I headed off toward a side room I'd seen the waitress disappear into. I hoped maybe there was a secret stash of desserts somewhere. Chocolate mousse instead of goose liver. As I walked, I paid special attention to the slippery floor, thinking that falling into one of the pools and cracking my skull would definitely cost me coolness points. I was paying so much attention to my feet and trying not to stagger that I walked into someone. To my credit, it'd been his fault. He'd backed into me. "Hey, watch it," I said, steadying myself. But he wasn't paying attention to me. His eyes were on another guy. A guy with a bloody nose. I'd walked right into the middle of a fight. Chapter 14. Two guys I'd never met before were squaring off against each other. They looked to be in their 20s, and neither noticed me. The one who'd bumped into me shoved the other one hard, forcing him to stagger back considerably. "You're afraid," yelled the guy by me. He had on green swimming trunks, and his black hair was slicked back with water. "You're all afraid. You just want to hole up in your mansions and let the guardians do your dirty work. What are you going to do when they're all dead? Who will protect you then?" The other guy wiped the blood off his face with the back of his hand. I suddenly recognized him, thanks to his blonde highlights. He was the Roy who'd yelled at Tasha about wanting to lead Maroi into battle. She'd called him Andrew. He tried to land a hit and failed. His technique was all wrong. "This is the safest way. Listen to that Strigoi lover, and we'll all be dead. She's trying to kill our whole race off. She's trying to save us. She's trying to get us to use black magic." The Strigoi lover had to be Tasha. The non-royal guy was the first person outside of my little circle whom I'd ever heard speak in her favor. I wondered how many others out there shared his view. He punched Andrew again, and my base instincts, or maybe the punch, made me leap into action. I sprang forward and wedged myself between them. I was still dizzy and a bit unsteady. If they hadn't been standing so close, I probably would have fallen over. They both hesitated, clearly caught off guard. "Get out of here," snapped Andrew. Being male and Maroi, they had greater height and weight than I, but I was probably stronger than either one alone. Hoping I could make the most of that, I grabbed each of them by the arm, pulled them toward me, and then shoved them away as hard as I could. They staggered, not having expected my strength. I staggered a little, too. The non-royal glared and took a step toward me. I was counting on the fact that he'd be old-fashioned and not hit a girl.
"What are you doing?" he exclaimed,
Several people had gathered and were watching excitedly. I returned his glare.
I'm trying to stop you guys from being any more idiotic than you already are. You want to help? Stop fighting each other. Ripping each other's heads off isn't going to save the Moroi unless you're trying to thin stupidity out of the gene pool.
I pointed at Andrew.
Tasha Ozera is not trying to kill everyone off. She's trying to get you to stop being a victim.
I turned to the other guy.
And as for you, you've got a long ways to go if you think this is the way to get your point across. Magic, especially offensive magic, takes a lot of self-control. And so far, you aren't impressing me with yours. I have more than you do. And if you knew me at all, you'd know how crazy that is.
The two guys stared at me, stunned. I was apparently more effective than a taser. Well, at least for several seconds I was, because once the shock of my words wore off, they went at each other again. I got caught in the crossfire and shoved away, nearly falling in the process. Suddenly, from behind me, Mason came to my defense. He punched the first guy he could, the non-royal. The guy flew backward, falling into one of the pools with a splash. I yelped, remembering my earlier fear about skull cracking, but a moment later, he found his feet and rubbed water out of his eyes. I grabbed Mason's arm, trying to hold him back, but he shrugged me off and went after Andrew. He shoved Andrew hard, pushing him into several Moroi, Andrew's friends, I suspected, who seemed to be trying to break up the fight. The guy in the pool climbed out, fury written all over his face, and made moves toward Andrew. This time, both Mason and I blocked his way. He glared at all of us.
"Don't," I warned him.
The guy clenched his fists and looked as though he might try to take us on. But we were intimidating, and he didn't appear to have an entourage of friends here like Andrew, who was shouting obscenities and being led away, did. With a few muttered threats, the non-royal backed off. As soon as he was gone, I turned on Mason.
"Are you out of your mind?"
"Huh?" he asked.
"Jumping into the middle of that."
"You jumped in too,"
he said. I started to argue, then realized he was right.
"It's different," I grumbled.
He leaned forward. "Are you drunk?"
"No,
of course not. I'm just trying to keep you from doing something stupid. Just because you have delusions of being able to kill a Strigoi doesn't mean you have to take it out on everyone else."
"Delusions?"
he asked stiffly. I started to feel kind of nauseous just then, my head spinning. I continued toward the side room, hoping I didn't stumble. But when I reached it, I saw that it wasn't some kind of dessert or drink room after all. Well, at least not in the way I'd been thinking. It was a feeder room. Several humans reclined on satin-covered chaise lounges with Moroi by their sides. Jasmine incense burned in the air. Stunned, I watched with an eerie fascination as a blonde Moroi guy leaned forward and bit into the neck of a very pretty redhead. All of these feeders were exceptionally good-looking, I realized just then. Like actresses or models, only the best for royalty. The guy drank long and deep, and the girl closed her eyes and parted her lips, an expression of pure bliss on her face as Moroi endorphins flooded into her bloodstream. I shivered, taken back to when I too had experienced that same kind of euphoria. In my alcohol-hazed mind, the whole thing suddenly seemed startlingly erotic. In fact, I almost felt intrusive, like I was watching people have sex. When the Moroi finished and licked the last of the blood away, he brushed his lips against her cheek in a soft kiss.
"Want to volunteer?"
Light fingertips brushed my neck, and I jumped. I turned around and saw Adrian's green eyes and knowing smirk.
"Don't do that,"
I told him, knocking his hand away.
Then what are you doing in here?
He asked.
I gestured around me.
I'm lost.
He peered at me.
Are you drunk?
No, of course not, but...
The nausea had settled a little, but I still didn't feel right.
I think I should sit down.
He took my arm.
Well, don't do it in here. Someone might get the wrong idea.
Let's go somewhere quiet.
He steered me off into a different room, and I looked around with interest. It was a massage area. Several Maroi lay back on tables and were getting back and foot massages from hotel staff. The oil they used smelled like rosemary and lavender. Under any other circumstances, a massage would have sounded great, but lying on my stomach seemed like the worst idea just now. I sat down the carpeted floor, leaning back against the wall. Adrian walked away and returned with a glass of water. Sitting down as well, he handed it to me.
Drink this. It'll help.
I told you, I'm not drunk, I mumbled, but I downed the water anyway.
Uh-huh.
He smiled at me.
You did nice work with that fight. Who was the other guy that helped you?
My boyfriend, I said. Sort of.
Maya was right. You do have a lot of guys in your life.
It's not like that.
Okay.
He was still smiling.
Where's Vasilisa? I figured she'd be attached to you.
She's with her boyfriend. I studied him.
What's with the tone? Jealous? You want him for yourself?
God, no. I just don't like him.
Does he treat her badly?
He asked.
No,
I admitted. He adores her. He's just kind of a jerk. Adrian was clearly enjoying this.
Ah, you are jealous. Does she spend more time with him than you?
I ignored that. Why do you keep asking about her? Are you interested in her? He laughed.
Rest easy. I'm not interested in her in the same way I am you.
But you are interested.
I just want to talk to her.
He left to fetch me more water.
Feeling better?
He asked, handing the glass to me. It was crystal and intricately carved. It seemed too fancy for plain water.
Yeah, I didn't think those drinks were that strong. That's the beauty of them, he chuckled. And speaking of beauty, that's a great color on you.
I shifted. I might not have been showing as much skin as those other girls, but I was showing more than I really wanted to with Adrian. Or was I? There was something weird about him. His arrogant manner annoyed me, but I still liked being around him. Maybe the smartass in me recognized a kindred spirit. Somewhere in the back of my drunken mind, a light clicked on, but I couldn't quite get to it. I drank more water. You haven't had a cigarette in like 10 minutes, I pointed out, wanting to change the subject. He made a face.
No smoking in here.
I'm sure you've made up for it in punch. His smile returned.
Well, some of us can hold our liquor. You aren't going to be sick, are you?
I still felt tipsy, but no longer nauseous.
No.
Good. I thought back to when I dreamed about him. It had been just a dream, but it had stuck with me, particularly the talk about me being surrounded in darkness. I wanted to ask him about it, even though I knew it was stupid. It had been my dream, not his.
Adrian?
He turned his green eyes on me.
Yes, darling.
I couldn't bring myself to ask. Never mind. He started to retort, then tilted his head toward the door.
Ah, here she comes.
Who? Lissa stepped into the room, eyes scanning around. When she spotted us, I saw relief break over her. I couldn't feel it, though. Intoxicants like alcohol numbed the bond. It was another reason I shouldn't have taken such a stupid chance tonight.
There you are, she said, kneeling beside me.
Glancing at Adrian, she gave him a nod.
Hey.
Hey yourself, cousin, he returned, using the family terms royals sometimes used around each other.
You okay?
Lissa asked me. When I saw how drunk you were, I thought you might have fallen in somewhere and drowned.
I'm not... I gave up trying to deny it. I'm fine.
Adrian's usual expression had turned serious as he studied Lissa. It again reminded me of the dream.
How'd you find her?
Lissa gave him a puzzled look.
I checked all the rooms.
Oh.
He looked disappointed.
I thought you might have used your bond.
Both she and I stared.
How do you know about that? I demanded.
Only a few people at school knew about it. Adrian had spoken about it as casually as he might have my hair color.
Hey, I can't reveal all my secrets, can I?
He asked mysteriously.
And besides, there's a certain way you two act around each other. It's hard to explain. It's pretty cool. All the old myths are true.
Lissa regarded him warily. The bond only works one way. Rose can sense what I'm feeling and thinking, but I can't do it back to her.
Ah.
We sat in silence a few moments, and I drank more water. Adrian spoke again.
What do you specialize in, anyway, cousin?
She looked embarrassed. We both knew it was important to keep her spirit power secret from others who might abuse her healing. But her cover story of not having specialized always bothered her.
I haven't, she said.
Do they think you're going to, late bloomer?
No.
You're probably higher in the other elements, though, right? Just not strong enough to really master any?
He reached out to pat her shoulder in an exaggerated show of comfort.
Yeah, how'd you...
The instant his fingers touched her, she gasped. It was as though a bolt of lightning had struck her. The strangest look crossed her face. Even drunk, I felt the flood of joy that came pouring through the bond. She stared at Adrian in wonder. His eyes were locked onto hers, too. I didn't understand why they were looking at each other like that, but it bothered me.
Hey, I said. Stop that. I told you she has a boyfriend.
I know, he said, still watching her. A small smile turned his lips.
We need to have a chat someday, cousin.
Yes, she agreed.
Hey! I was more confused than ever.
You have a boyfriend, and there he is.
She blinked back to reality. All three of us turned toward the doorway. Christian and the others stood there. I suddenly had a flashback to when they'd found me with Adrian's arm around me. This wasn't much better. Lissa and I were sitting on either side of him, very close. She sprang up, looking mildly guilty. Christian was regarding her curiously.
We're getting ready to leave, he said.
Okay, she told him.
She looked down at me.
Ready?
I nodded and started to clamber to my feet. Adrian caught my arm as I did and helped me up. He smiled at Lissa.
Nice talking to you.
To me, he murmured very quietly.
Don't worry, I told you. I'm not interested in her that way. She doesn't look as good in a bathing suit. Probably not as good out of one, either.
I pulled my arm away. Well, you'll never find out.
It's okay, he said. I have a good imagination.
I joined the others, and we headed back toward the main part of the lodge. Mason gave me as strange a look as Christian had given Lissa and stayed away from me, walking toward the front with Eddie. To my surprise and discomfort, I found myself walking beside Maya. She looked miserable.
I'm really sorry about what happened, I said finally.
You don't have to act like you care, Rose.
No, I mean it. It's horrible. I'm so sorry.
She wouldn't look at me.
Are you going to see your dad soon?
Whenever they have the memorial, she said stiffly.
Oh.
I didn't know what else to say and gave up, instead turning my attention to the stairs as we climbed back up to the lodge's main level. Unexpectedly, Maya was the one who continued the conversation.
I watched you break up that fight, she said slowly.
You mentioned offensive magic, like you knew about it.
Oh, great. She was going to make a play at blackmail. Or was she? At the moment, she seemed almost civil.
I was just guessing, I said. No way I was going to bust Tasha and Christian. I don't really know that much. Just stories I've heard.
Oh. Her face fell.
What kind of stories?
Well, I tried to think of something neither too vague nor too specific. Like I told those guys, the concentration thing is big, because if you're in a battle with Strogoi, all sorts of things can distract you, so you've got to keep control. That was actually a basic guardian rule, but it must have been new to Maya. Her eyes widened with eagerness.
What else? What kind of spells do people use?
I shook my head. I don't know. I don't really even know how spells work. And like I said, these are just stories I've heard. My guess is you just find ways to use your element as a weapon, like fire users really have an advantage because fire will kill Strogoi, so it's easy for them, and air users can suffocate people. I'd actually experienced that last one vicariously through Lissa. It had been horrible. Maya's eyes grew wider still.
What about a water user? She asked.
How could water hurt a Strogoi? I paused.
I never heard any stories about water users. Sorry.
Do you have any ideas, though? Ways that, like, someone like me could learn to fight?
Ah, so that's what this was about. It actually wasn't all that crazy. I remembered how excited she'd looked at the meeting when Tasha had talked about attacking Strogoi. Maya wanted to take revenge on the Strogoi for her mother's death. No wonder she and Mason had been getting along so well.
Maya, I said gently, catching hold of the door to let her pass. We were almost at the lobby now. I know how you must want to do something, but I think you're better off just sort of letting yourself, grieve.
She reddened, and suddenly I was seeing the normal and angry Maya.
Don't talk down to me, she said.
Hey, I'm not. I'm serious. I'm just saying you shouldn't do anything rash while you're still upset. Besides,
I bit off my words. She narrowed her eyes.
What?
Screw it. She needed to know.
Well, I don't really know what good a water user could be against a Strogoi. It's probably the least useful element to use on one of them.
Outrage filled her features.
You're a real bitch, you know that?
I'm just telling you the truth.
Well, let me tell you the truth. You're a total idiot when it comes to guys.
I thought about Dimitri. She wasn't entirely off base.
Mason's great, she continued. One of the nicest guys I know, and you don't even notice. He'd do anything for you, and you were off throwing yourself at Adrian Ivashkov.
Her words surprised me. Could Maya have a crush on Mason? And while I certainly hadn't been throwing myself at Adrian, I could see how it might have looked that way. And even if it weren't true, that wouldn't have stopped Mason from feeling hurt and betrayed.
You're right, I said.
Maya stared at me, so astonished I'd agreed with her that she didn't say anything else for the rest of the walk. We reached the part of the lodge that split off into different wings for guys and girls. I grabbed a hold of Mason's arm as the others walked off.
Hang on, I told him. I badly needed to reassure him about Adrian, but a tiny part of me wondered if I was doing it because I actually wanted Mason or because I just liked the idea of him wanting me and selfishly didn't want to lose that. He stopped and looked at me. His face was wary.
I wanted to tell you I'm sorry. I shouldn't have yelled at you after the fight. I know you were just trying to help. And with Adrian, nothing happened. I mean it.
It didn't look that way, Mason said.
But the anger on his face had faded. I know. But believe me, it's all him. He's got some kind of stupid crush on me. My tone must have been convincing because Mason smiled.
Well, hard not to.
I'm not interested in him, I continued. Or anyone else. It was a small lie, but I didn't think it mattered just then. I was going to be over Dimitri soon, and Maya had been right about Mason. He was wonderful, and sweet, and cute. I would be an idiot not to pursue this. Right? My hand was still on his arm, and I pulled him toward me. He didn't need much more of a signal. He leaned down and kissed me, and in the process, I found myself pressed up against the wall, very much like with Dimitri in the practice room. Of course, it felt nothing like how it had with Dimitri, but it was still nice in its way. I put my arms around Mason and started to pull him closer. "We could go somewhere," I said. He pushed back and laughed.
"Not when you're drunk."
"I'm not that drunk anymore," I said, trying to pull him back. Giving me a small kiss on the lips, he stepped back.
"Drunk enough. Look, this isn't easy, believe me. But if you still want me tomorrow, when you're sober, then we'll talk."
He leaned down and kissed me again. I tried to wrap my arms around him, but he broke away once more.
"Easy there, girl,"
he teased, backing toward his hallway. I glared at him, but he only laughed and turned around. As he walked away, my glare faded, and I headed back to my room with a smile on my face. Chapter 15. I was trying to paint my toenails the next morning, not easy with such a god-awful hangover, when I heard a knock at the door. Lissa had been gone when I woke up, so I staggered across the room, trying not to ruin my wet nail polish. Opening the door, I saw one of the hotel staff standing outside with a large box in both arms. He shifted it slightly so that he could peer around and look at me.
"I'm looking for Rose Hathaway."
"That's me." I took the box from him. It was big, but not all that heavy. With a quick thank you, I shut the door, wondering if I should have tipped him. Oh well. I sat on the floor with the box. It had no markings on it and was sealed with packing tape. I found a pen and stabbed at the tape. Once I'd hacked off enough, I opened the box and peered inside. It was filled with perfume. There had to be at least 30 little bottles of perfume packed into the box. Some I'd heard of, some I hadn't. They ranged from crazy expensive, movie star caliber, to cheap kinds I'd seen in drugstores. Eternity, Angel, Vanilla Fields, Jade Blossom, Michael Kors, Poison, Hypnotic Poison, Pure Poison, Happy, Light Blue, Yovan Musk, Pink Sugar, Vera Wang. One by one, I picked up the boxes, read the descriptions, and then pulled out the bottles for a sniff. I was about halfway through when reality hit. These had to be from Adrian. I didn't know how he'd managed to get all of these delivered to the hotel in such a short amount of time, but money can make almost anything happen. Still, I didn't need the attention of a rich, spoiled Moroi. Apparently, he hadn't picked up on my signals. Regretfully, I started to place the perfumes back in the box, then stopped. Of course, I'd return them, but there was no harm in sniffing the rest before I did. Once more, I started pulling out bottle after bottle. Some I just snipped the cap of. Others I sprayed in the air. Serendipity, Dolce & Gabbana, Shalimar, Daisy. Note after note hit me. Rose, violet, sandalwood, orange, vanilla, orchid. By the time I was finished, my nose barely worked anymore. All of these had been designed for humans. They had a weaker sense of smell than vampires and even dampiers, so these scents were extra strong. I had a new appreciation for what Adrian had meant about only a splash of perfume being necessary. If all these bottles were making me dizzy, I could only imagine what a Moroi would smell. The sensory overload wasn't really helping the headache I'd woken up with, either. I packed up the perfume for real this time, stopping only when I came to a certain kind that I really liked. I hesitated, holding the little box in my hand. Then, I took the red bottle out and re-sniffed it. It was a crisp, sweet fragrance. There was some kind of fruit, but not a candied or sugary fruit. I racked my brain for a scent I'd once smelled on a girl I knew in my dorm. She'd told me the name. It was like a cherry, but sharper.
Currant. That's what it was.
And here it was in this perfume, mixed with some florals, Lily of the Valley and others I couldn't identify. Whatever the blend, something about it appealed to me. Sweet, but not too sweet. I read the box, looking for the name. Amor, Amor. Fitting, I muttered,
seeing how many love problems I seem to have lately.
But I kept the perfume anyway and repacked the rest. Hoisting the box up in my arms, I took it down to the front desk and acquired some packing tape to reseal it. I also got directions to Adrian's room. Apparently, the Ivashkovs practically had their own wing. It wasn't too far from Tasha's room. Feeling like a delivery girl, I walked down the hall and stopped in front of his door. Before I could manage to knock, it opened up, and Adrian stood before me. He looked as surprised as I felt.
"Little Dampier," he said cordially. "Didn't expect to see you here."
"I'm returning these." I hoisted the box toward him before he could protest. Clumsily, he caught it, staggering a bit in surprise. Once he had a good grip, he took a few steps back and set it on the floor.
"Didn't you like any of them?" he asked.
"You want me to get you some more?"
"Don't send me any more gifts."
"It isn't a gift. It's a public service. What woman doesn't own perfume?"
"Don't do it again," I said firmly. Suddenly, a voice behind him asked, "Rose, is that you?"
I peered beyond him.
"Lissa."
"What are you doing here?"
Between my headache and what I had assumed was some interlude with Christian, I'd blocked her out as best I could this morning. Normally, I would have known the instant I approached that she was inside the room. I opened myself up again, letting her shock run into me. She hadn't expected me to show up here.
"What are you doing here?" she asked.
"Ladies, ladies," he said teasingly. "No need to fight over me."
I glared. "We're not. I just want to know what's going on here." A breath of aftershave hit me, and then I heard a voice behind me.
"Me too."
I jumped. Spinning around, I saw Dmitri standing in the hallway. I had no clue what he was doing in the Ivashkov wing.
"On his way to Tasha's room," a voice inside me suggested.
Dmitri no doubt always expected me to get into all sorts of trouble, but I think seeing Lissa there caught him off guard. He stepped past me and came into the room, looking between the three of us.
"Male and female students aren't supposed to be in each other's rooms."
I knew pointing out that Adrian wasn't technically a student wasn't going to get us out of trouble here. We weren't supposed to be in any guy's room.
"How do you keep doing this?" I asked Adrian, frustrated.
"Do what?"
"Keep making us look bad." He chuckled.
"You guys are the ones who came here."
"You shouldn't have let them in," scolded Dmitri. "I'm sure you know the rules at St. Vladimir's."
Adrian shrugged.
"Yeah, but I don't have to follow any school's stupid rules."
"Perhaps not," said Dmitri coldly. "But I would have thought you'd still respect those rules."
Adrian rolled his eyes.
"I'm kind of surprised to find you lecturing about underage girls."
I saw the anger kindle in Dimitri's eyes, and for a moment, I thought I might have seen the loss of control I'd teased him about. But he stayed composed, and only his clenched fists showed how angry he was.
"Besides," continued Adrian, "nothing sordid was going on. We're just hanging out. If you want to hang out with young girls, do it at one of the public areas."
I didn't really like Dmitri calling us young girls, and I kind of felt like he was overreacting here. I also suspected part of his reaction had to do with Adrian.
"Nothing sordid was going on. We're just hanging out. If you want to hang out with young girls, do it at one of the public areas."
I didn't really like Dmitri calling us young girls, and I kind of felt like he was overreacting here. I also suspected part of his reaction had to do with the fact that I was here.
Adrian laughed just then, a weird kind of laugh that made my skin crawl.
Young girls? Young girls?
Sure, young and old at the same time. They've barely seen anything in life, yet they've already seen too much. One's marked with life, and one's marked with death. But they're the ones you're worried about?
Worry about yourself, Dampier.
Worry about you, and worry about me. We're the ones who are young.
The rest of us just sort of stared. I don't think anyone had expected Adrian to suddenly take an abrupt trip to Crazyville.
Adrian was calm and looked perfectly normal again. He turned away and strolled toward the window, glancing casually back at the rest of us as he pulled out his cigarettes.
You ladies should probably go.
He's right. I am a bad influence.
I exchanged looks with Lissa. Hurriedly, we both left and followed Dimitri down the hall toward the lobby.
That was strange, I said a couple of minutes later. It was stating the obvious, but, well, someone had to.
Very, said Dimitri.
He didn't sound angry so much as puzzled. When we reached the lobby, I started to follow Lissa back toward our room, but Dimitri called to me.
Rose, he said. Can I talk to you?
I felt a sympathetic rush of feeling from Lissa. I turned toward Dimitri and stepped off to the side of the room, out of the way of those passing through. A party of Moroi in diamonds and fur swept past us, anxious looks on their faces. Bellhops followed with luggage. People were still leaving in search of safer places. The Strigoi paranoia was far from over. Dimitri's voice snapped my attention back to him.
That's Adrian Ivashkov.
He said the name the same way everyone else did.
Yeah, I know.
This is the second time I've seen you with him.
Yeah, I replied glibly. We hang out sometimes.
Dimitri arched an eyebrow, then jerked his head back toward where he'd come from.
You hang out in his room a lot?
Several retorts popped into my head, and then a golden one took precedence.
What happens between him and me is none of your business.
I managed a tone very similar to the one he'd used on me when making a similar comment about him and Tasha.
Actually, as long as you're at the academy, what you do is my business.
Not my personal life. You don't have any say in that.
You're not an adult yet.
I'm close enough. Besides, it's not like I'll magically become an adult on my 18th birthday.
Clearly, he said.
I blushed. That's not what I meant.
I know what you meant. And the technicalities don't matter right now. You're an academy student. I'm your instructor. It's my job to help you and to keep you safe. Being in the bedroom of someone like him... Well, that's not safe.
I can handle Adrian Ivashkov, I muttered. He's weird. Really weird, apparently, but harmless.
I secretly wondered if Dimitri's problem might be that he was jealous. He hadn't pulled Lissa aside to yell at her. The thought made me slightly happy, but then I remembered my earlier curiosity about why Dimitri had even wandered by.
Speaking of personal lives... I suppose you were off visiting Tasha, huh?
I knew it was petty, and I expected a none-of-your-business response. Instead, he replied.
Actually, I was visiting your mother.
You going to hook up with her, too?
I knew, of course, that he wasn't, but the quip seemed too good to pass up.
He seemed to know that, too, and merely gave me a weary glance.
No. We were looking over some new data about the Strigoi in the Drozdov attack.
My anger and snarkiness dried up. The Drozdovs. The Badikas. Suddenly, everything that had happened this morning seemed incredibly trivial. How could I have stood there arguing with Dimitri about romances that might or might not be happening when he and the other guardians were trying to protect us?
What'd you find out? I asked quietly.
We've managed to track some of the Strigoi, he said.
or at least the humans with them. There were witnesses who lived nearby who spotted a few of the cars the group used. The plates were all from different states. The group appears to have split up, probably to make it harder for us. But one of the witnesses did catch one plate number. It's registered to an address in Spokane.
Spokane? I asked incredulously. Spokane, Washington? Who makes Spokane their hideout? I'd been there once. It was about as boring as every other backwoods northwest city.
Strigoi, apparently, he said, deadpan. The address was fake, but other evidence shows they really are there. There's a kind of shopping plaza that has some underground tunnels. There have been Strigoi sightings around that area.
Then, I frowned, are you going to go after them? Is somebody going to? I mean, this is what Tasha's been saying all along. If we know where they are... He shook his head.
The Guardians can't do anything without permission from higher up. That's not going to happen anytime soon.
I sighed. Because the Moroi talk too much.
They're being cautious, he said.
I felt myself getting worked up again. Come on! Even you can't want to be careful on this one. You actually know where Strigoi are hiding out. Strigoi, who massacred children. Don't you want to go after them when they don't expect it? I sounded like Mason now.
It's not that easy, he said. We answer to the Guardian Council and the Moroi government. We just run off and act on impulse. And anyway, we don't know everything yet. You should never walk into any situation without knowing all the details.
Zen life lessons again, I sighed. I ran a hand through my hair, tucking it behind my ears. Why'd you tell me this anyway? This is Guardian stuff, not the kind of thing you let novices in on. He considered his words and his expression softened. He always looked amazing, but I liked him best like this.
I've said a few things, the other day and today, that I shouldn't have. Things that insulted your age. You're 17, but you're capable of handling and processing the same things those much older than you do.
My chest grew light and fluttery. Really? He nodded.
You're still really young in a lot of ways, and act young. But the only way to really change that is to treat you like an adult. I need to do that more. I know you'll take this information and understand how important it is, and keep it to yourself.
I didn't love being told I acted young, but I liked the idea that he would talk to me like an equal.
Dimka?
Came a voice. Tasha Ozera walked up to us. She smiled when she saw me.
Hello, Rose.
There went my mood.
Hey,
I said flatly. She placed a hand on Dimitri's forearm, sliding her fingers over the leather of his coat. I eyed those fingers angrily. How dare they touch him?
You've got that look,
she told him.
What look?
He asked. The stern look he'd worn with me vanished. There was a small, knowing smile on his lips, almost a playful one.
That look that says you're going to be on duty all day.
Really? I have a look like that?
There was a teasing, mocking tone to his voice. She nodded.
When does your shift technically end?
Dimitri actually looked, I swear, sheepish.
An hour ago.
You can't keep doing this, she groaned. You need a break.
Well, if you consider that I'm always Lissa's guardian.
For now, she said knowingly, I felt sicker than I had last night.
There's a big pool tournament going on upstairs.
I can't, he said, but the smile was still on his face.
Even though I haven't played in a long time.
What the? Dimitri played pool? Suddenly, it didn't matter that we'd just had a discussion about him treating me like an adult. Some small part of me did know what a compliment that was, but the rest of me wanted him to treat me like he did Tasha. Playful, teasing, casual. They were so familiar with each other, so completely at ease.
Come on, then,
she begged. Just one round. We could take them all.
I can't,
he repeated. He sounded regretful, not with everything going on. She sobered a little.
No, I suppose not.
Glancing at me, she said teasingly,
I hope you realize what a hardcore role model you have here. He's never off duty.
Well, I said, copying her lilting tone from earlier. For now, at least. Tasha looked puzzled. I don't think it occurred to her that I'd be making fun of her. Dimitri's dark look told me he knew exactly what I was doing. I immediately realized I'd just killed whatever progress I'd made as an adult.
We're finished here, Rose. Remember what I said.
Yeah, I said, turning away. I suddenly wanted to go to my room and veg for a while. This day was making me tired already.
Definitely.
I hadn't gotten far when I ran into Mason. Good God, men everywhere.
You're mad,
he said as soon as he looked at my face. He had a knack for discovering my moods.
What happened?
Some authority problems. It's been a weird morning. I sighed, unable to get Dimitri off the brain. Looking at Mason, I remembered how I'd been convinced I wanted to get serious with him last night. I was a head case. I couldn't make up my mind about anyone. Deciding the best way to banish one guy was to pay attention to another. I grabbed Mason's hand and steered him away. Come on. Wasn't the deal to go somewhere, private today?
I figured you weren't drunk anymore.
He joked, but his eyes looked very, very serious and interested.
I assumed it was all off.
Hey, I stand by my claims, no matter what. Opening my mind, I searched for Lissa. She was no longer in our room. She'd gone off to some other royal event, no doubt still practicing for Priscilla Voda's big dinner. Come on, I told Mason. We'll go to my room. Aside from when Dimitri inconveniently happened to be passing by someone's room, nobody was really enforcing the mixed-gender rule. It was practically like being back in my academy dorms. As Mason and I went upstairs, I related to him what Dimitri had told me about the Strigoi in Spokane. Dimitri had told me to keep it to myself, but I was mad at him again, and I didn't see any harm in telling Mason. I knew he'd be interested in this. I was right. Mason got really worked up.
What?
He exclaimed as we walked into my room.
They're not doing anything?
I shrugged and sat on my bed. Dimitri said,
I know, I heard you, about being careful and all that.
Mason paced around the room angrily.
But if those Strigoi go after another Maroi, another family, damn it, they're going to wish they weren't so careful then.
Forget about it, I said. I felt kind of miffed that me on a bed wasn't enough to deter him from crazy battle plans. There's nothing we can do. He stopped walking.
We could go.
Go where? I asked stupidly.
To Spokane. There are buses you can catch in town.
Wait, you want us to go to Spokane and take on Strigoi?
Sure. Eddie'd do it too. We could go to that mall. They wouldn't be organized or anything, so we could wait and pick them off one by one.
Only stare. When did you get so dumb?
Oh, I see. Thanks for the vote of confidence.
It's not about confidence, I argued, standing up and approaching him. You kick major ass. I've seen it. But this isn't the way. We can't go get Eddie and take on Strigoi. We need more people, more planning, more information. I rested my hands on his chest. He placed his over them and smiled. The fire of battle was still in his eyes, but I could tell his mind was shifting to more immediate concerns. Like me. I didn't mean to call you dumb, I told him. I'm sorry.
You're just saying that now because you want to have your way with me.
Of course I am, I laughed, happy to see him relax. The nature of this conversation reminded me a little of the one Christian and Lissa had had in the chapel.
Well,
he said.
I don't think I'm going to be too hard to take advantage of.
Good, because there are lots of things I want to do. I slid my hands up and around his neck. His skin was warm beneath my fingers, and I remembered how much I'd enjoyed kissing him last night. Suddenly, out of nowhere, he said,
You really are his student.
Whose?
Belikov's. I was just thinking about when you mentioned needing more information and stuff. You act just like him. You've gotten all serious since you've been hanging out with him.
No, I haven't. Mason had pulled me closer, but now I suddenly didn't feel so romantic. I'd wanted to make out and forget Dmitri for a while, not have a conversation about him. Where had this come from? Mason was supposed to be distracting me. He didn't notice anything was wrong.
You've just changed, that's all. It's not bad. Just different.
Something about that made me angry, but before I could snap back, his mouth met mine in a kiss. Reasonable discussions sort of vanished. A bit of that dark temper started to rise in me, but I simply channeled that intensity into physicality as Mason and I fell on top of each other. I yanked him down on the bed, managing to do so without stopping the kissing. I was nothing if not a multitasker. I dug my nails into his back while his hand slid up the back of my neck and released the ponytail I'd just made minutes ago. Running his fingers through the unbound hair, he shifted his mouth down and kissed my neck.
You are amazing, he told me,
and I could tell that he meant it. His whole face glowed with affection for me. I arched upward, letting his lips press harder against my skin while his hands slipped under the bottom of my shirt. They trailed upward along my stomach, just barely tracing the edge of my bra. Considering we'd just been having an argument a minute ago, I was surprised to see things escalating so quickly. Honestly, though, I didn't mind. This was the way I lived my life. Everything was always fast and intense with me. The night Dmitri and I had fallen victim to Viktor Doshkov's lust charm, there'd been some pretty furious passion going on, too. Dmitri had controlled it, though, so sometimes we'd taken things slowly, and that had been wonderful in its own way. But most of the time, we hadn't been able to hold ourselves back. I could feel it all over again. The ways his hands had run over my body, the deep, powerful kisses. It was then that I realized something. I was kissing Mason, but in my head, I was with Dmitri. And it wasn't like I was simply remembering either. I was actually imagining I was with Dmitri, right now, reliving that night all over again. With my eyes closed, it was easy to pretend. But when I opened them and saw Mason's eyes, I knew he was with me. He adored me and had wanted me for a long time. But for me to do this, to be with him and pretend I was with someone else, it wasn't right. I wiggled out of his reach. No, don't. Mason stopped immediately because that's the kind of guy he was.
Too much?
He asked. I nodded.
That's okay. We don't have to do that.
He reached for me again and I moved farther away.
No, I just don't. I don't know. Let's call it quits, okay?
He
was speechless for a moment.
What happened to the lots of things you wanted to do?
Yeah, it looked pretty bad, but what could I say? I can't get physical with you because when I do, I just think about the other guy I actually want.
You're just a stand-in?
I swallowed, feeling stupid. I'm sorry, Mace. I just can't. He sat up and ran a hand over his hair.
Okay, all right.
I could hear the hardness in his voice. You're mad. He glanced over at me, a stormy expression on his face.
I'm just confused. I can't read your signals. One moment you're hot, the next you're cold. You tell me you want me, then you tell me you don't. If you picked one, that'd be fine. But you keep making me think one thing, and then you end up going in a completely different direction. Not just now, all the time.
It was true. I had gone back and forth with him,
Sometimes I was flirty, other times I completely ignored him.
"Is there something you want me to do?" he asked when I didn't say anything.
"Something that'll, I don't know, make you feel better about me?"
"I don't know," I said weakly. He sighed.
"Then what do you want in general?"
"Dimitri," I thought. Instead, I repeated myself. "I don't know." With a groan, he stood up and headed for the door.
"Rose, for someone who claims she wants to gather as much information as possible, you really have a lot to learn about yourself."
The door slammed behind him. The noise made me flinch, and as I stared at where Mason had just stood, I realized he was right. I did have a lot to learn. Chapter 16. Lissa found me later in the day. I'd fallen asleep after Mason left, too dejected to leave the bed. Her slamming of the door jolted me awake. I was happy her. I needed to spill about the fumbled thing with Mason, but before I could, I read her feelings. They were as troubled as mine. So, as always, I put her first. "What happened?" She sat on her bed, sinking into the feather duvet, her feelings both furious and sad.
"Christian?"
"Really?" I'd never known them to fight. They teased each other a lot. But it was hardly the kind of thing that could nearly bring her to tears.
"He found out I was with Adrian this morning."
"Oh, wow," I said. "Yeah, that might be a problem." Standing up, I walked over to the dresser and found my brush. Wincing, I stood in front of the gilt-framed mirror and began brushing out the snarls acquired during my nap. She groaned.
"But nothing happened. Christian's freaking out over nothing. I can't believe he doesn't trust me."
"He trusts you. The whole thing's just weird, that's all." I thought about Dimitri and Tasha. Jealousy makes people do and say stupid things.
"But nothing happened," she repeated. "I mean, you were there and..."
"Hey, I never found out. What were you doing there?" "Adrian sent me a bunch of perfume."
You mean that giant box you were carrying?"
I nodded.
"Whoa."
"Yeah, I came to return it," I said. "The question is, what were you doing there?"
"Just talking," she said.
She started to light up, on the verge of telling me something, but then she paused. I felt the thought almost reach the front of her mind and then get shoved back.
"I've got a lot to tell you, but first, tell me what's up with you."
"Nothing's up with me."
"Whatever, Rose. I'm not psychic like you, but I know when you're pissed off about something. You've been kind of down since Christmas. What's up?"
Now wasn't the time to get into what had happened on Christmas when my mom told me about Tasha and Dimitri. But I did tell Lissa the story about Mason, editing out why I had stopped and simply driving home how I had.
"Well," she said when I finished, "that was your right."
"I know, but I kind of led him on. I can see why he'd be upset."
"You guys can probably fix it, though. Go talk to him. He's crazy about you."
It was more than miscommunication. Things with Mason and me couldn't be patched up so easily.
"I don't know," I told her. "Not everyone's like you and Christian."
Her face darkened.
"Christian, I still can't believe he's being so stupid about this."
I didn't mean to, but I laughed.
"Liss, you guys will kiss and make up in like a day. More than kiss, probably."
It slipped out before I could stop it. Her eyes widened.
"You know."
She shook her head in exasperation.
"Of course you know."
"Sorry," I said. I hadn't meant to let her know I knew about the sex thing, not until she told me herself. She eyed me.
"How much do you know?"
Not much," I lied. I'd finished brushing my hair but began playing with the brush's handle in order to avoid her eyes.
"I have got to learn to keep you out of my mind," she muttered.
"Only way I can talk to you lately."
Another slip-up. "What's that supposed to mean?
she demanded.
Nothing, I...
She was giving me a sharp look.
I don't know. I just feel like we don't talk as much anymore.
Takes two to fix that, she said, voice kind again. You're right, I said, not pointing out that two could fix that only if one wasn't always with her boyfriend. True, I was guilty in my own way of locking things up, but I had wanted to talk to her a number of times lately. The timing just never seemed to be right. Not even now. You know, I never thought you'd be first. Or I guess I never thought I'd be a senior and still be a virgin.
Yeah, she said dryly. Me either.
Hey, what's that supposed to mean? She grinned, then caught sight of her watch. Her smile fell.
Ugh. I've got to go to Priscilla's banquet. Christian was supposed to go with me, but he's off being an idiot.
Her eyes focused hopefully on me.
What? No, please, Liz. You know I hate those formal royal things.
Oh, come on, she begged. Christian flaked out. You can't throw me to the wolves. And didn't you just say we needed to talk more?
I groaned. Besides, when you're my guardian, you'll have to do these things all the time.
I know, I said darkly. I thought I could maybe enjoy my last 6 months of freedom. But in the end, she conned me into going with her, as we'd both known she would. We didn't have much time, and I had to do a rush shower, blow dry, and makeup job. I'd brought Tasha's dress on a whim, and while I still wanted her to suffer horribly for being attracted to Dimitri, I was grateful for her present now. I pulled on the silken material, happy to see the shade of red was just as killer on me as I'd imagined. It was a long, Asian-style dress with flowers embroidered into the silk. The high neck and long hem covered a lot of skin, but the material clung to me and looked sexy in a different kind of way than showing a lot of skin did. My black eye was practically non-existent by now. Lissa, as always, looked amazing. She wore a deep purple dress by John Orosky, a well-known Moroi designer. It was sleeveless and made of satin. The tiny amethyst-like crystals set into the straps sparkled against her pale skin. She wore her hair up in a loose, artfully styled bun. When we reached the banquet room, we drew a few eyes. I don't think the royals had expected the Dragomor princess to bring her Dampier friend to this highly anticipated, invitation-only dinner. But hey, Lissa's invite had said, and guessed. She and I took our places at one of the tables with some royals whose names I promptly forgot. They were happy to ignore me, and I was happy ignored. Besides, it wasn't like there weren't plenty of other distractions. This room was done all in silver and blue. Midnight blue silk cloths covered the tables, so shiny and smooth that I was terrified to eat on them. Sconces of beeswax candles hung all over the walls, and a fireplace decorated with stained glass crackled away in one corner. The effect was a spectacular panorama of color and light, dizzying to the eye. In the corner, a slim Moroi woman played soft cello music, her face dreamy as she focused on the song. The clinking of crystal wine glasses complemented the string's low, sweet notes. Dinner was equally amazing. The food was elaborate, but I recognized everything on my plate. China, of course, and liked all of it. No foie gras here. Salmon in a sauce of shiitake mushrooms, a salad with pears and goat cheese, delicate almond-stuffed pastries for dessert. My only complaint was that the portions were small. The food seemed more like it was there to simply decorate the plates, and I swear, I finished it in 10 bites. Moroi might still need food along with their blood, but they didn't need as much as a human, or say, a growing Dampier girl needed. Still, the food alone could have justified me coming along on this venture, I decided. Except, when the meal ended,
Lissa told me we couldn't leave.
We have to mingle, she whispered.
Mingle? Lissa laughed at my discomfort.
You're the social one.
It was true. In most circumstances, I was the one who put myself out there and wasn't afraid to talk to people. Lissa tended to be shyer. Only, with this group, the tables were turned. This was her element, not mine. And it amazed me to see just how well she could interact with royal high society now. She was perfect, polished, and polite. Everyone was eager to talk to her, and she always seemed to know the right thing to say. She wasn't using compulsion, exactly, but she definitely put out an air that drew others to her. I think it might have been an unconscious effect of spirit. Even with the meds, her magical and natural charisma came through. Whereas intense social interactions had once been forced and stressful for her, she now conducted them with ease. I was proud of her. Most of the conversation stayed pretty light. Fashion, royal love lives, etc. No one seemed to want to spoil the atmosphere with ugly Strigoi talk. So I clung to her side for the rest of the night. I tried to tell myself it was just practice for the future, when I'd follow her around like a quiet shadow anyway. The truth was, I just felt too uncomfortable with this group, and knew my usual snarky defense mechanisms really weren't useful here. Plus, I was painfully aware that I was the only Dampier dinner guest. There were other Dampiers, yes, but they were in formal guardian mode, hovering on the periphery of the room. As Lissa worked the crowd, we drifted over to a small group of Moroi whose voices were growing louder. One of them I recognized. He was the guy from the fight I'd helped break up, only this time he wore a striking black tuxedo instead of a swimsuit. He glanced up at our approach, blatantly checked us out, but apparently didn't remember me. Ignoring us, he continued on with his argument. Not surprisingly, Moroi protection was the topic. He was the one who'd been in favor of Moroi going on the offensive against the Strigoi.
"What part of suicide don't you understand?"
asked one of the men standing nearby. He had silvery hair and a bushy mustache. He wore a tux, too, but the younger guy looked better in one.
"Moroi training as soldiers will be the end of our race."
"It's not suicide," exclaimed the young guy. "It's the right thing to do. We have to start looking out for ourselves.
Learning to fight and use our magic is our greatest asset other than the Guardians."
"Yes, but with the Guardians, we don't need other assets," said Silverhair. "You've been listening to non-royals. They don't have any Guardians of their own, so of course they're scared. But that's no reason to drag us down and put our lives at risk."
"Then don't," said Lissa suddenly. Her voice was soft, but everyone in the little group stopped and looked at her. "When you talk about Moroi learning how to fight, you make it sound like an all-or-nothing matter. It's not. If you don't want to fight, then you shouldn't have to. I completely understand." The man looked slightly mollified. "But that's because you can rely on your Guardians. A lot of Moroi can't. And if they want to learn self-defense, there's no reason why they shouldn't do it on their own." The younger guy grinned triumphantly at his adversary.
"There, you see. It's not that easy," countered Silverhair. "If it was just a matter of you crazy people wanting to get yourselves killed, then fine, go do it. But where are you going to learn all these so-called fighting skills?"
"We'll figure out the magic on our own. Guardians will teach us actual physical fighting."
"Yes, see? I knew that was where this was going. Even if the rest of us don't take part in your suicide mission, you still want to strip us of our Guardians to train up your pretend army."
The young guy scowled at the word pretend, and I wondered if more fists would fly.
"You owe it to us."
"No, they don't," said Lissa. Intrigued gazes turned her way again. This time, it was Silverhair who regarded her triumphantly.
The younger guy's features flushed with anger.
Guardians are the best battle resources we have.
They are, she agreed. But that doesn't give you the right to take them away from their duty. Silverhair practically glowed.
Then how are we supposed to learn?
Demanded the other guy. The same way guardians do, Lissa informed him. If you want to learn to fight, go to the academies, form classes, and start at the beginning, the same way the novices do. That way, you won't be taking guardians away from active protection. It's a safe environment. And the guardians there specialize in teaching students anyway. She paused thoughtfully. You could even start making defense part of the standard curriculum for Moroi students already there. Astonished stares fell on her, mine included. It was such an elegant solution, and everyone else around us realized it. It gave no party 100% of its demands, but it met most in a way that didn't really harm the other side. Pure genius. The other Moroi studied her with wonder and fascination. Suddenly, everyone started talking at once, excited about the idea. They drew Lissa in, and soon there was a passionate conversation going on about her plan. I got shuffled to the edges and decided that was just fine. Then I retreated altogether and sought out a corner near a door. Along the way, I passed a server with a tray of hors d'oeuvres. Still hungry? I eyed them suspiciously, but saw nothing that looked like the foie gras from the other day. I gestured to one that looked like some sort of braised rare meat. Is that goose liver? I asked. She shook her head. Sweetbread. That didn't sound bad. I reached for it.
It's pancreas, said a voice behind me. I jerked back.
What? I squeaked. The waitress took my shock for rejection and moved on. Adrian Ivashkov moved into my line of sight, looking immensely pleased with himself. Are you messing with me? I asked. Sweetbread is pancreas? I don't know why that shocked me so much. Moroi consumed blood. Why not internal organs? Still, I repressed a shudder. Adrian shrugged.
It's really good.
I shook my head in disgust. Oh, man, rich people suck. His amusement continued.
What are you doing here, little Dampier? Are you following me around?
Of course not, I scoffed. He was dressed to perfection, as always. Especially not after all the trouble you've gotten us into. He flashed one of his tantalizing smiles, and despite how much he annoyed me, I again felt that overwhelming urge to be near him. What was up with that?
I don't know, he teased.
He'd looked perfectly sane now, exhibiting no trace of the weird behavior I'd witnessed in his room. And yeah, he looked a lot better in a tuxedo than any guy I'd seen in there so far.
As many times as we keep seeing each other? This is, what, the fifth time? It's starting to look suspicious. Don't worry, though. I won't tell your boyfriend. Either of them.
I opened my mouth to protest, then remembered he'd seen me with Dimitri earlier. I refused to blush. I only have one boyfriend. Sort of. Maybe not anymore. And anyway, there's nothing to tell. I don't even like you.
No?
Asked Adrian, still smiling. He leaned toward me like he had a secret to share.
Then why are you wearing my perfume?
This time, I did blush. I took a step back. I'm not. He laughed.
Of course you are. I counted the boxes after you left. Besides, I can smell it on you. It's nice. Sharp. But still sweet. Just like I'm sure you are deep down inside. And you got it right, you know. Just enough to add an edge, but not enough to drown your own scent.
The way he said scent made it sound like a dirty word. Royal Moroi might make me uncomfortable, but smart-ass guys hitting on me didn't. I dealt with them on a regular basis. I shook off my shyness and remembered who I was. Hey,
I said, tossing my hair back. I had every right to take one. You offered them. Your mistake is in assuming me taking one means anything. It doesn't, except that maybe you should be more careful with where you dump all that money of yours.
Ooh, Rose Hathaway is here to play, folks.
He paused and took a glass of what looked like champagne from a passing waiter.
You want one?
I don't drink.
Right.
Adrian handed me a glass anyway, then shooed the waiter away and took a drink of the champagne. I had a feeling it wasn't his first of the night.
So, sounds like our Vasilisa put my dad in his place.
I glanced back at the group I'd just left. Silverhair still stood there, gesticulating wildly. That guy's your dad?
That's what my mom says.
You agree with him? About how Maroi fighting would be suicide? Adrian shrugged and took another sip.
I don't really have an opinion on that.
That's not possible. How can you not feel one way or another?
Dunno. Just not something I think about. I've got better things to do.
Like stalk me, I suggested. And Lissa. I still wanted to know why she'd been in his room. He smiled again.
I told you. You're the one following me.
Yeah, I know, 5 times. I stopped. 5 times?
He nodded.
No, it's only been 4. With my free hand, I ticked them off. There was that first night, the night at the spa, then when I came to your room, and now tonight. The smile turned secretive.
If you say so.
I do say so. Again, my words trailed off. I had talked to Adrian one other time.
Sort of.
You can't mean...
Mean what?
A curious, eager expression lit his eyes. It was more hopeful than presumptuous. I swallowed, recalling the dream. Nothing. Without thinking about it, I took a drink of champagne. Across the room, Lissa's feelings burned back to me, calm and content. Good.
Why are you smiling?
Adrian asked. Because Lissa's still over there, working that crowd.
No surprise there. She's one of those people who can charm anyone she wants if she tries hard enough. Even people who hate her.
I gave him a wry look. I feel that way when I talk to you.
But you don't hate me,
he said, finishing the last of his champagne.
Not really.
I don't like you either.
So you keep saying.
He took a step toward me, not threatening, just making the space between us more intimate.
But I can live with that.
Rose!
The sharpness of my mother's voice cut through the air. A few people within earshot glanced over at us. My mother, all 5 angry feet of her, stormed up to us. Chapter 17.
What do you think you're doing?
She demanded. Her voice was still too loud as far as I was concerned. Nothing, I...
Excuse us, Lord Ivashkov,
she growled. Then, like I was 5 years old, she grabbed me by my arm and jerked me out of the room. Champagne sloshed out of my glass and splashed onto the skirt of my dress. What do you think you're doing? I exclaimed, once we were out in the hall. Mournfully, I looked down at my dress. This is silk! You could have ruined it! She grabbed the champagne flute and set it down on a nearby table.
Good. Maybe it'll stop you from dressing up like a cheap whore.
Whoa! I said, shocked. That's kind of harsh. And where do you get off turning motherly all of a sudden? I gestured to the dress. This isn't exactly cheap. You thought it was nice of Tasha to give it to me.
That's because I didn't expect you to wear it out with Maroi and make a spectacle of yourself.
I'm not making a spectacle of myself. And anyway, it covers everything up.
A dress that tight might as well be showing everything,
she retorted.
She, of course, was dressed in Guardian black, tailored black linen pants and a matching blazer. She had a few curves of her own, but the clothing hid them.
Especially when you're with a group like that. Your body's conspicuous, and flirting with Maroi doesn't really help.
I wasn't flirting with him. The accusation made me angry, because I felt I'd been on really good behavior lately. I used to flirt all the time, and do other things with Maroi guys, but after a few talks and one embarrassing incident with Dimitri, I'd realized how stupid that was. Dampier girls did have to be careful with Maroi guys, and I kept that in mind all the time now. Something petty occurred to me. Besides, I said mockingly, isn't that what I'm supposed to do? Hook up with a Maroi and further my race? It's what you did. She glowered.
Not when I was your age.
You were only a few years older than me.
Don't do anything stupid, Rose, she said.
You're too young for a baby. You don't have the life experience for it. You haven't even lived your own life yet. You won't be able to do the kind of job you wish you could.
I groaned, mortified. Are we really discussing this? How did we go from me allegedly flirting to suddenly having a litter? I'm not having sex with him or anyone else, and even if I were, I know about birth control. Why are you talking to me like I'm a child?
Because you act like one.
It was remarkably like what Dimitri had told me. I glared. So you're going to send me to my room now?
No, Rose.
She suddenly looked tired.
You don't have to go to your room. But don't go back in there either. Hopefully you didn't draw too much attention.
You make it sound like I was giving a lap dance in there, I told her. I just had dinner with Lissa.
You'd be surprised what things can spark rumors, she warned, especially with Adrian Ivashkov.
With that, she turned and headed off down the hall. Watching her, I felt anger and resentment burn through me. Overreact much? I hadn't done anything wrong. I knew she had her whole blood whore paranoia, but this was extreme, even for her. Worst of all, she'd dragged me out of there, and several people had witnessed it. For someone who supposedly didn't want me attracting attention, she'd kind of messed that one up. A couple of Maroi, who'd been standing near Adrian and me, walked out of the room. They glanced in my direction and then whispered something as they passed. Thanks, Mom, I muttered to myself. Humiliated, I stalked off in the opposite direction, not really sure where I was going. I headed out toward the back of the lodge, away from all the activity. The hall eventually ended, but a door leading to some stairs sat on the left. The door was unlocked, so I followed the stairs upward to another door. To my pleasure, it opened up onto a small rooftop deck that didn't appear to see much use. A blanket of snow lay over it all, but it was early morning out here, and the sun shone brightly, making everything glitter. I brushed snow off a large box-like object that looked to be part of the ventilation system. Heedless of my dress, I sat down on it. Wrapping my arms around myself, I stared off, taking in the view and the sun I rarely got to enjoy. I was startled when the door opened a few minutes later. When I looked back, I was even more startled to see Dimitri emerge. My heart gave a small flutter, and I turned away, unsure what to think. His boots crunched in the snow as he walked over to where I was sitting. A moment later, he took off his long coat and draped it over my shoulders. He sat down beside me.
You must be freezing.
I was, but I didn't want to admit it. The sun's out. He tipped his head back, looking up at the perfect blue sky. I knew he missed the sun as much as I did sometimes.
It is, but we're still on a mountain in the middle of winter.
I didn't answer. We sat there in a comfortable silence for a while. Occasionally, a light wind blew clouds of snow around. It was night for Maroi, and most would be going to bed soon,
so the ski runs were quiet.
My life is a disaster, I finally said.
It's not a disaster, he said automatically.
Did you follow me from the party?
Yes.
I didn't even know you were there. His dark clothes indicated he must have been on guardian duty at the party. So you saw the illustrious Janine cause a commotion by dragging me out?
It wasn't a commotion. Hardly anyone noticed. I saw because I was watching you.
I refused to let myself get excited over that. That's not what she said, I told him. I might as well have been working a corner as far as she was concerned. I relayed the conversation from the hallway.
She's just worried about you,
Dimitri said when I was finished. She overreacted.
Sometimes mothers are overprotective.
I stared at him. Yeah, but this is my mother, and she didn't seem that protective, really. I think she was more worried I'd embarrass her or something. And all that becoming a mother too young stuff was stupid. I'm not going to do anything like that.
Maybe she wasn't talking about you,
he said. More silence. My jaw fell open. You don't have the life experience for it. You haven't even lived your own life yet. You won't be able to do the kind of job you wish you could. My mom had been 20 when I was born. Growing up, that had always seemed really old to me. But now, that was only a few years off for me. Not old at all. Did she think she'd had me too soon? Had she done a shoddy job raising me simply because she didn't know any better at the time? Did she regret the way things had turned out between us? And was it maybe possible that she'd had some personal experience of her own with Maroi men and people spreading rumors about her? I'd had inherited a lot of her features. I mean, I'd even noticed tonight what a nice figure she had. She had a pretty face, too. For a nearly 40-year-old, I mean. She'd probably been really, really good-looking when she was younger. I sighed. I didn't want to think about that. If I did, I might have to reevaluate my relationship with her. Maybe even acknowledge my mother was a real person. And I already had too many relationships stressing me. Lissa always worried me, even though she seemed to be okay for a change. My so-called romance with Mason was in shambles, and then, of course, there was Dimitri. We aren't fighting right now, I blurted out. He gave me a sidelong look.
Do you want to fight?
No. I hate fighting with you. Verbally, I mean. I don't mind in the gym. I thought I detected a hint of a smile. Always a half smile for me, rarely a full one.
I don't like fighting with you either.
Sitting next to him there, I marveled at the warm and happy emotions springing up inside of me. There was something about being around him that felt so good, that moved me in a way Mason couldn't. You can't force love, I realized. It's there, or it isn't. If it's not there, you've got to be able to admit it. If it is there, you've got to do whatever it takes to protect the ones you love. The next words that came out of my mouth astonished me, both because they were completely unselfish and because I actually meant them. You should take it. He flinched.
What?
Tasha's offer. You should take her up on it. It's a really great chance. I remembered my mom's words about being ready for children. I wasn't. Maybe she hadn't been. But Tasha was. And I knew Dimitri was, too. They got along really well. He could go be her guardian, have some kids with her. It would be a good deal for both of them.
I never expected to hear you say anything like that,
he told me, voice tight.
Especially after...
What a bitch I've been... Yeah. I tugged his coat tighter against the cold. It smelled like him. It was intoxicating, and I could half imagine being wrapped in his embrace. Adrian might have been onto something about the power of scent. Well, like I said, I don't want to fight anymore. I don't want us to hate each other, and, well, I squeezed my eyes shut and then opened them.
No matter how I feel about us, I want you to be happy. Silence yet again. I noticed then that my chest hurt. Dimitri reached out and put his arm around me. He pulled me to him, and I rested my head on his chest. Rosa, was all he said. It was the first time he'd really touched me since the night of the lust charm. The practice room had been something different, more animal. This wasn't even about sex. It was just about being close to someone you cared about the emotion that kind of connection flooded you with. Dimitri might run off with Tasha, but I would still love him. I would probably always love him. I cared about Mason, but I would probably never love him. I sighed into Dimitri, just wishing I could stay like that forever. It felt right being with him. And, no matter how much the thought of him and Tasha made me ache, doing what was best for him felt right. Now I knew it was time to stop being a coward and do something else that was right. Mason had said I needed to learn something about myself. I just had. Reluctantly, I pulled away and handed Dimitri his coat. I stood up. He regarded me curiously, sensing my unease. "Where are you going?" he asked. "To break someone's heart," I replied. I admired Dimitri for a heartbeat more, the dark, knowing eyes and silken hair. Then I headed inside. I had to apologize to Mason and tell him there'd never be anything between us. Chapter 18. The high heels were starting to hurt me, so I took them off when I went back inside, walking barefoot through the lodge. I hadn't been to Mason's room, but I remembered him mentioning the number once and found it without difficulty. Shane, Mason's roommate, opened the door a few moments after I knocked.
"Hey, Rose."
He stepped aside for me, and I walked in, peering around. Some infomercial was playing on the TV. One downside of nocturnal life was a shortage of good programming, and empty soda cans covered nearly every flat surface. There was no sign of Mason anywhere.
"Where is he?"
I asked. Shane stifled a yawn.
"I thought he was with you."
"I haven't seen him all day." He yawned again, then frowned in thought.
"He was throwing some stuff in a bag earlier. I figured you guys were running off for some crazy romantic getaway, picnic or something. Hey, nice dress."
"Thanks," I murmured, feeling a frown of my own coming on. Packing a bag? That didn't make any sense. There was nowhere to go. There was no way to go either. This resort was as tightly guarded as the academy. Lissa and I had only managed to break out of that place with compulsion, and it had still been a pain in the ass. Yet, why on earth would Mason pack a bag if he wasn't leaving? I asked Shane a few more questions and decided to follow up on the possibility, crazy as it seemed. I found the guardian in charge of security and scheduling. He gave me the names of those guardians who'd been on duty around the resort's borders when Mason had last been seen. Most of the names I knew, and most were off duty now, making them easy to find. Unfortunately, the first couple hadn't seen Mason around today. When they asked why I wanted to know, I gave vague answers and hurried off. The third person on my list was a guy named Alan, a guardian who usually worked the academy's lower campus. He was just coming in after skiing, taking his equipment off near the door. Recognizing me, he smiled as I approached.
"Sure, I saw him,"
he said, bending down to his boots. Relief flooded over me. Until then, I hadn't realized how worried I'd been. "Do you know where he is?"
"Nope. Let him and Eddie Castile and, whatever her name, the Rinaldi girl, out through the north gate and didn't see them after that."
I stared. Alan continued unhooking his skis as though we were discussing slope conditions. "You let Mason and Eddie and Maya out?"
"Yep."
"Why?"
He finished and looked back up at me, a kind of happy and bemused look on his face.
Because they asked me.
An icy feeling started creeping through me. I found out which guardian had watched the North Gate with Alan and immediately sought him out. That guardian gave me the same response. He'd let Mason, Eddie, and Maya out, no questions asked. And, like Alan, he didn't seem to think there was anything wrong with that. He appeared almost dazed. It was a look I'd seen before. A look that came over people when Lyssa used compulsion. In particular, I'd seen it happen when Lyssa didn't want people to remember something very well. She could bury the memory in them, either erasing it altogether or planting it for later. She was so good at compulsion, though, that she could just make people forget completely. For them to still have some memories meant someone who wasn't as good at compulsion had worked on them. Someone, say, like Maya. I wasn't the fainting type, but for just a moment, I felt like I could keel over. The world spun, and I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. When I could see again, my surroundings stayed stable. Okay, no problem. I would reason this out. Mason, Eddie, and Maya had left the resort earlier today. Not only that, they had done it by using compulsion, which was utterly forbidden. They hadn't told anyone. They'd left through the North Gate. I'd seen a map of the resort. The North Gate guarded a driveway that connected to the only semi-major road in the area, a small highway that led to a little town about 12 miles away. The town Mason had mentioned that had buses. To Spokane. Spokane, where this traveling pack of Strigoi and their humans might be living. Spokane, where Mason could fulfill all his crazy dreams about slaying Strigoi. Spokane, which he only knew about because of me. No, 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 I murmured to myself, almost running toward my room. There, I stripped off the dress and changed into heavy winter clothes, boots, jeans, and a sweater. Grabbing my coat and gloves, I hurried back toward the door and then paused. I was acting without thinking. What was I actually going to do? I needed to tell someone, obviously. But that would get the trio in a lot of trouble. It would also tip off Dimitri that I'd gone and gossiped about the Spokane Strigoi information he'd told me in confidence, as a sign of respecting my maturity. I studied the time. It would take a while for anyone around the resort to know we were missing. If I could actually get out of the resort. A few minutes later, I found myself knocking on Christian's door. He answered, looking sleepy and cynical as usual.
If you've come to apologize for her, he told me loftily, you can just go ahead and...
Oh, shut up, I snapped. This isn't about you. Hastily, I relayed the details of what was going on. Even Christian didn't have a witty response for that one.
So, Mason, Eddie, and Maya went to Spokane to hunt Strigoi?
Yes.
Holy shit. Why didn't you go with them? Seems like something you'd do.
I resisted the urge to smack him.
Because I'm not insane, but I'm going to go get them before they do something even stupider.
That was when Christian caught on.
And what do you need from me?
I need to get off the resort's property. They got Maya to use compulsion on the guards. I need you to do the same thing. I know you've practiced it.
I have, he agreed. But, well...
For the first time ever, he looked embarrassed.
I'm not very good at it. And doing it on Dampier's is nearly impossible. List 100 times better than me, or probably any Maroi.
I know, but I don't want to get her into trouble.
He snorted. But you don't mind if I do?
I shrugged. Not really.
You're a piece of work, you know that?
Yeah, I do, actually. So, 5 minutes later, he and I found ourselves trekking out to the North Gate. The sun was coming up, so most everyone was inside.
This was a good thing, and I hoped it'd make our escape that much easier.
Stupid, stupid, I kept thinking.
This was going to blow up in our faces. Why had Mason done this? I knew he'd had this whole crazy vigilante attitude, and he'd certainly seemed upset that the Guardians hadn't done anything about the recent attack. But still, was he really that unhinged? He had to know how dangerous this was. Was it possible I'd upset him so much with the making out disaster that he'd gone off the deep end? Enough to go and do this and get Maya and Eddie to join him? Not that those two would be hard to convince. Eddie would follow Mason anywhere. And Maya was almost as gung-ho as Mason to kill every Strigoi in the world. Yet, out of all the questions I had about this, one thing was definitely clear. I'd told Mason about the Strigoi in Spokane. Hands down, this was my fault. And without me, none of this would have happened. Lissa always makes eye contact, I coached Christian as we approached the exit, and speaks in a really, like, calm voice. I don't know what else. I mean, she concentrates a lot, too, so try that. Focus on forcing your will on them.
I know, he snapped. I've seen her do it.
Fine, I snapped back. Just trying to help. Squinting, I saw that only one guardian stood at the gate, a total stroke of luck. They were in between shifts. With the sun out, the risk of Strigoi had disappeared. The guardians would still continue in their duties, but they could relax just a bit. The guy on duty didn't seem particularly alarmed by our appearance.
What are you kids doing out here?
Christian swallowed. I could see the lines of tension on his face.
You're going to let us out of the gate, he said.
A note of nervousness made his voice tremble, but otherwise, he did a fair approximation of Lissa's soothing tones. Unfortunately, it had no effect on the guardian. As Christian had pointed out, using compulsion on a guardian was nearly impossible. Maya had gotten lucky. The guardian grinned at us.
What?
He asked, clearly amused. Christian tried again. You're going to let us out. The guy's smile faltered just a little, and I saw him blink in surprise. His eyes didn't glaze over in the same way Lissa's victims did, but Christian had done enough to briefly enthrall him. Unfortunately, I could tell right then and there that it wouldn't be enough to make him let us out and forget. Fortunately, I'd been trained to compel people without the use of magic. Sitting near his post was an enormous maglite, 2 feet long and easily 7 pounds. I grabbed the maglite and clocked him on the back of the head. He grunted and crumpled to the ground. He'd barely seen me coming. And despite the horribleness of what I'd just done, I kind of wished one of my instructors had been there to grade me on such an awesome performance.
Jesus Christ! Exclaimed Christian. You just assaulted a guardian!
Yeah. So much for getting the guys back without getting anyone in trouble. I didn't know just how much you sucked at compulsion. I'll deal with the fallout later. Thanks for your help. You should head back before the next shift comes on. He shook his head and grimaced.
No, I'm going with you on this.
No, I argued. I only needed you to get through the gate. You don't have to get in trouble over this.
I'm already in trouble.
He pointed at the guardian. He saw my face. I'm screwed either way, so I might as well help you save the day. Stop being a bitch for a change. We hurried off, and I cast one last guilty glance at the guardian. I was pretty sure I hadn't hit him hard enough to cause real damage, and with the sun coming out, he wouldn't freeze or anything. After about 5 minutes of walking down the highway, I knew we had a problem. Despite being covered and wearing sunglasses, the sun was taking its toll on Christian. It was slowing us down, and it wouldn't take that long for someone to find the guardian I'd taken out and come after us. A car, not one of the academies, appeared behind us, and I made a decision.
I didn't approve of hitchhiking in the least. Even someone like me knew how dangerous it was. But we needed to get to town fast. And I prayed Christian and I could take down any creepy stalker guy who tried to mess with us. Fortunately, when the car pulled over, it was just a middle-aged couple who looked more concerned than anything else.
You kids okay?
I jerked my thumb behind me. Our car slid off the road. Can you take us to town so I can call my dad? It worked. 15 minutes later, they dropped us off at a gas station. I actually had trouble getting rid of them because they wanted to help us so much. Finally, we convinced them we'd be fine, and we walked the few blocks over to the bus station. As I'd suspected, this town wasn't much of a hub for real travel. 3 lines serviced the town, 2 that went to other ski resorts, and 1 that went to Lowestown, Idaho. From Lowestown, you could go on to other places. I'd half hoped that we might beat Mason and the others before their bus came. Then we could have hauled them back without any trouble. Unfortunately, there was no sign of them. The cheery woman at the counter knew exactly who we were talking about, too. She confirmed that all 3 of them had bought tickets to Spokane by way of Lowestown.
"Damn it," I said.
The woman raised her eyebrows at my language. I turned to Christian. "You got money for the bus?" Christian and I didn't talk much along the way, except for me to tell him he'd been an idiot about Lissa and Adrian. By the time we reached Lowestown, I finally had him convinced, which was a minor miracle. He slept the rest of the way to Spokane, but I couldn't. I just kept thinking over and over that this was my fault. It was late in the afternoon by the time we reached Spokane. It took a few people, but we finally found someone who knew the shopping center Dimitri had mentioned. It was a long ways from the bus station, but it was walkable. My legs were stiff after almost 5 hours of riding a bus, and I wanted the movement. The sun was a while from setting, but it was lower and less detrimental to vampires, so Christian didn't mind the walk either. And, as often happened, when I was in calm settings, I felt a tug into Lissa's head. I let myself fall into her because I wanted to know what was happening back at the resort.
"I know you want to protect them, but we need to know where they are."
Lissa sat on the bed in our room while Dimitri and my mom stared her down. It was Dimitri who had spoken. Seeing him through her eyes was interesting. She had a fond respect for him, very different from the intense roller coaster of emotions I always experienced.
"I told you," said Lissa. "I don't know. I don't know what happened."
Frustration and fear for us burned through her. It saddened me to see her so anxious, but at the same time, I was glad I hadn't gotten her involved. She couldn't report what she didn't know.
"I can't believe they wouldn't have told you where they were going," said my mother.
Her words sounded flat, but there were lines of worry on her face.
"Especially with your bond."
"It only works one way," said Lissa sadly. "You know that." Dimitri knelt down so he could be at Lissa's height and look her in the eye. He pretty much had to do that to look anyone in the eye.
"Are you sure there's nothing? Nothing at all you can tell us? They're nowhere in town. The man at the bus station didn't see them, though we're pretty sure that's where they must have gone. We need something, anything to go on."
"Man at the bus station." That was another stroke of luck. The woman who'd sold us the tickets must have gone home. Her replacement wouldn't know us. Lissa gritted her teeth and glared.
"Don't you think if I knew, I'd tell you? You don't think I'm worried about them, too? I have no idea where they are, none. And why'd they even leave? It doesn't make any sense either, especially why they'd go with Maya, of all people."
A twinge of hurt flickered through the bond. Hurt at being left out of whatever we were doing, no matter how wrong. Dimitri sighed and leaned back on his heels. From the look on his face, he obviously believed her. It was also obvious that he was worried.
worried in more than a professional way. And seeing that concern for me, ate up my heart.
Rose?
Christian's voice brought me back to myself.
We're here, I think.
The plaza consisted of a wide, open area in front of a shopping center. A cafe was carved into a corner of the main building, its tables spilling out into the open area. A crowd moved in and out of the complex, busy even at this time of the day.
So how do we find them?
Asked Christian. I shrugged.
Maybe if we act like Strugoi, they'll try to stake us.
A small, reluctant smile played over his face. He didn't want to admit it, but he thought my joke was funny. He and I went inside. Like any mall, it was filled with familiar chains, and a selfish part of me thought that maybe if we found the group soon enough, we could still get in some shopping time. Christian and I walked the length of it twice and saw no signs of our friends or anything resembling tunnels.
Maybe we're in the wrong place, I finally said. Or maybe they are, suggested Christian. They could have gone to some other... Wait!
He pointed, and I followed the gesture. The three renegades sat at a table in the middle of the food court, looking dejected. They looked so miserable, I almost felt sorry for them.
I'd kill for a camera right now, said Christian, smirking.
This isn't funny, I told him, striding toward the group. Inside, I breathed a sigh of relief. The group clearly hadn't found any Strugoi. We're all still alive, and could maybe be taken back before we got into even more trouble. They didn't notice me until I was almost right next to them. Eddie's head jerked up.
Rose, what are you doing here?
Are you out of your mind? I yelled. A few people nearby gave us surprised looks. Do you know how much trouble you're in? How much trouble you've gotten us in?
How the hell did you find us?
Asked Mason in a low voice, glancing anxiously around.
You guys aren't exactly criminal masterminds, I told them.
Your informant at the bus station gave you away. That, and I figured out that you'd want to go off on your pointless Strugoi hunting quest. The look Mason gave me revealed he still wasn't entirely happy with me. It was Maya who replied, however.
It isn't pointless.
Oh? I demanded. Did you kill any Strugoi?